commencing countdown.
3, 2, 1.
This is The Contracting Experience. Connecting government contracting professionals to the world around them through conversations with acquisition influencers, insights into evolving hot topics, and sharing lessons learned from the field.
Welcome, podcast listeners. On this episode of The Contracting Experience, we welcome two special guests to highlight the benefits and importance of the Ability One program. First off, we welcome Marine Corps veteran and outreach coordinator, Mr. Jason Michelson. We've invited Jason to the podcast to share his experiences, struggles, and success through the Ability One program. Jason was recently a guest speaker at the DoD Procure-to-Pay Symposium and drew a well-deserved standing ovation from the over 1,200 of us who were in attendance. If you haven't heard Jason's testimonial firsthand, you're not going to want to miss this episode. Absolutely great stuff. Heartfelt, uplifting, and motivating. Welcome, Jason. It's great to have you here.
Thank you. I appreciate the opportunity, and I just hope to get the message out so we can help as many people together as possible.
Oh, awesome, Jason. Thank you. And we also welcome Mr. Roger Westermeyer, who is the Technical Director and Ability One Representative for the Air Force Installation Contracting Center. Roger will help us demystify the Ability One program by explaining the why and the how behind the program, while also maybe dispelling some myths or false perceptions along the way. Welcome, Roger, and thanks for joining us.
Hey, thanks, Rob. I'm really glad to be here and excited to be talking about the Ability One program and also to hear Jason's story. I think this program is one of the most meaningful in the federal government. You know, I've been an active advocate for over 20 years, and I appreciate the opportunity to spread the word about this program. So thank you for inviting me.
Oh, excellent, Roger. Glad to have you both. And again, a warm welcome to both of you as to all of our entire listening audience. So, Jason, no pressure at all here to follow up on that well-deserved standing ovation at the P2P symposium. But can you please take the stage here for a little bit, share your experiences with our podcast listeners?
I'd be honored to. So my story with the Ability One program, it actually starts long before I ever found the company I work for, which I work for a company called Global Connections to Employment. We are an Ability One employer. Now, my disability started when I was active duty. I had a howitzer dropped on my legs, which, if you don't know what that is, it is a 16,000-pound cannon that has to be towed by a 5-ton truck. When we were unloading off of the back of the 5-ton, I was wrong place, wrong time. My job is communications. Gunny said, "Michelson, get over there and help him." I did what I was ordered to do. The driver of the truck bounced it when he was pulling off, causing the truck to hit the gun. Everybody lost their grip. I had my knees bent, and the trails of the gun caught my thighs, buckled my legs underneath it, and the trails were actually resting across the tops of my thighs. I spent 2 years in constant recovery, surgeries, physical therapy, and everything. And then we had a big event happen throughout the nation, 9/11. 9/11 happened. I was on leave at the time. I knew that my med board was going to be coming up soon. As soon as I saw on TV that 9/11 happened, I called up at my admin department trying to get my med board stopped. And on that day, they told me, "Nope, you are out on the 30th of this month." So I was given approximately 2 weeks to get out of the Marine Corps because they wanted everybody that was on medical, they wanted them out before October 1st because October 1st, they put the stop loss in effect. Didn't want medical people on medical boards just sitting in the Marine Corps not able to do anything. So I was forced out, no SEP classes, nothing. I was literally handed my medical record and told to have a good life. After that, my ex-wife now, but current wife at the time, we went back home to Pennsylvania with our three small children. And we lasted 6 months as a civilian family before she looked at me and said, "I miss the military lifestyle." Joking around with her, I told her, "Well, then you go join." She retired last year, 20 years Air Force service. So I spent a couple of years following her around. We went to Elmendorf Air Force Base up in Alaska. That was her first duty station. Her second duty station was MacDill Air Force Base down in Florida, from one extreme to the next. And once I got to Florida, I realized, hey, this is where I want to be. Me and her, we split up. I could not find work for nothing because I walk with a limp. At the time, I walked with a limp. Now I walk with a cane. Every time that I would walk into a place and they'd see my limp, or I'd tell them that I was at the VA on this day, this day, this day, they didn't want nothing to do with me. So I ended up just driving Uber and Lyft for quite a few years because I couldn't get gainful employment. Finally, I reached out to the VA, their CWT program, Compensative Work Therapy Program. They were able to get me in connection with Global Connection to Employment. When I talked to Miss Dominique Woodard, who was the recruiter that brought me in for the first time, I saw the amount of passion that she put into making sure that I was taken care of, making sure that my disabilities weren't going to be a limitation to me. She put me in a position that I could succeed. And from that, as soon as I saw that's what she was doing, how much she was putting into it, I knew that's where I wanted to be. So for 4.5 years, I kept working through the ranks. I started out as a custodian working at SOCOM, which I'm not going to lie, at first it was really tough. I went from being a communication Marine that was working on radios and computers to now I'm mopping the floors and cleaning the toilets of the people that I used to serve with. But my team members, they saw my struggles and they worked with me and helped me through everything. I started looking around and I started seeing that this organization has the same camaraderie that we have in the military. And that's what I was missing. Once I started letting go of my military mindset, I'm better than this, I'm not. Everybody is the same. We all deserve the same chance. And through the Ability One program, I've seen that. I've never before this worked with anybody with a disability. And I've had so much problems through the years accepting my disabilities. But I was given these chances and I saw all these people with disabilities that are more severe than mine and they're succeeding and thriving. And that pushed me even more to want to help more. Once I got over to the recruiting and outreach side, I knew that I had a niche. I was good at talking to veterans. Veterans talk to veterans. From that, I was able to link up with our local VA hospital and their compensated work therapy program. They remembered when I came through the program, and my old counselor is now the director there. So we started working to get more and more veterans back to on a road to independence. We have successfully placed from the CWT program in Bay Pines, we've successfully placed four veterans. We have gone throughout the area. We've connected with so many different programs now that are getting gainful employment for all of these veterans. The thing about this program is when you put veterans in these contracts, everybody's going to succeed. The veterans get to be back around the military community, which a lot of us, that's what we need. And we're also introduced to a new way of thinking where we can help everybody. Military have leadership skills right to start from. We know that. So we want to try and use that to help them move forward in life. This program has allotted me so much more freedom than I ever would have had. I now have a 2-year-old daughter who 3 years ago, I never would have thought of having another child. I have 4 amazing children. My 3 oldest children are either active duty or married to active duty. My oldest daughter, her and her husband are both stationed up at Malmstrom Air Force Base. My son, he's at Oviedo, Florida. He's a Marine Corps recruiter following right in my footsteps. My middle daughter, her and her husband are out at Rotoa, Spain. And then my two-year-old daughter, well, she's here with me, just the light of my life. I had swore when me and my wife got married, I'm on my second wife, that I was not having any more children. And she agreed to that. I didn't want to bring another child into this life, that into this world that I couldn't support financially. And I couldn't find work. So I was not willing to create another child. Because the Ability One program has given me the independence that I needed, and I have climbed through the ranks, I am now financially able to support a child. And I can honestly say it was the best decision that I've ever made. My daughter has saved my life in more ways than you can think. Another thing that the Ability One program has allowed me to do is I've linked up with other nonprofit agencies. I'm part of, I'm a board member on a nonprofit called Rack Fishing, and we take out disabled veterans kayak fishing for therapy. We've actually linked up with a couple of VAs, and they're utilizing us for therapy for their veterans. The only thing the veteran has to do is just show up. We have the kayaks, the fishing poles, the life jackets. We send them out with either a guide or a volunteer, so they're not alone. These are all opportunities that I never would have experienced if I wasn't in the Ability One program. And I was never exposed to that side. And I'm so thankful that I'm able to do this. Thank you.
All right, Jason. Wow, powerful stuff. You certainly lived up to the introduction. Heartfelt, uplifting, motivating. First of all, thank you so much for your service. But also another huge thanks for sharing your experiences with us today, your current work with veterans as you're paying it forward, and how you've overcome so many obstacles physically, emotionally, even culturally. I mean, powerful stuff. And as you mentioned, thanks to the Ability One program, you continue to support your mission with your outreach, as you mentioned, with other veterans, with other folks struggling with the same experiences that you went through. So again, thanks for sharing that. And in your current role, you're currently the recruiting and outreach coordinator for GCE, Global Connections to Employment. Can you tell us a little bit about your current role and maybe share your favorite part of that job?
Gladly. So my current role as a recruiting and outreach coordinator, essentially, I go out into the community and I find people who have disabilities, because 70% of people who have disabilities want to work, but they can't find gainful employment. So my job is to find those people and to get them employed. Now, we're not like a temp agency that goes and finds jobs for these people. We are an actual employer. So when I talk to somebody, I already have a contract for them. I direct them to where they are best going to fit. I will never put anybody in a job that I do not feel that they're going to be good at, because that's setting them up for failure. That's something that I will never do. And that's something that the Ability One program does not want. They want to see every one of the team members succeed. Now, with this, we recruit everybody from every disability possible. We do not discriminate in any way. I personally specialize in getting disabled veterans back to work, because I have that connection with that community. That's not saying that that's all that I recruit. We recruit everybody. We want everybody that wants to work, we want to get them back to work. That way they can have the independence that they want. The independence that I so much desired, we're going to give to them.
All right. Excellent, Jason. It's just incredible to see how you continue to give back despite the challenges that you've overcome. Your dedication to helping others, making a positive impact, truly a testament to your strength and your character. Please know that your efforts are deeply appreciated and have a profound impact on many, many lives. So thank you, Jason. So, Roger, you've been patiently waiting in the wings here, and you've certainly got a tough act to follow here. But as we spoke before this episode, Sometimes folks hear testimonials like Jason's. They're moved. They want to make a difference. They want to make an impact in people's lives, but they're really not sure on quite how to do it. So with your help, I'd like to dive into the mechanics of the Ability One program and maybe demystify the process a little bit. But first, and maybe we probably should have started with this, can you describe the Ability One program for our listeners? What is it and what's the intent?
Sure. First of all, I just want to say that stories like Jason is why I'm an advocate for the program. So the program itself, it's a federal government program that was started by President Roosevelt, so almost 90 years ago. So it's been around a while. It was codified in law to the Javits-Wegener-O'Day Act. You heard the term JWAD. That's the background there. And its purpose, quite simply, is to employ people with significant disabilities who are blind or who are blind. That includes Wounded Warriors like Jason, doing that through federal contracts. So a little background, as Jason sort of noted, the employment rate for disabled people has been historically very high, somewhere in the 60 to 70%. And you heard Jason's story. So that's sort of why the program is put in place, to help those people find employment. The program is actually managed by the Ability One Commission, which is a very small federal agency. So actually civil servants manage the program. They are supported by two central nonprofits. You hear the term Source America and NIB. So they're the two nonprofits that help manage it. And the contracts are actually supported or performed by over 450 nonprofit companies out across the United States. So currently they employ over 37,000 people with disabilities or visually impaired. Among those, about 2,500 are veterans. So that's sort of the purpose of it in a little background.
Okay. Oh, great. Thanks, Roger. So besides the fact that it's a mandatory source, in accordance with our friends there at FAR 8.7, why should we contract with Ability One? I mean, I know Jason gave us the big reasons, that it taps America's underutilized workforce, it provides some people opportunities that they might not otherwise have access to, and it makes a huge difference in people's lives. But what are the benefits for utilizing Ability One from the business side of things? Is it really something our contracting officers have an obligation to do?
So there's a couple reasons. The first one you hit on is required by law in the FAR. And the second, and Jason sort of hit on, is the social and fiscal benefits. So let me talk a little bit about each one. So it is required by law, that JWAD Act that I mentioned, and it's covered in FAR 8.703 for those that like to read the FAR. So it's what is called a mandatory source, Ability One. And if an item is on what they call the procurement list, then you have to buy it from Ability One. So you're saying, well, what's this procurement list? It's literally a list of items that you have to procure. And if you go to the AbilityOne.gov website, you can see the whole listing of different things that are on there. It can be commodities, so think like the Skillcraft pens. It can also be service contracts like custodial or grounds maintenance. And typically those are done by base. So it might be custodial at Wright Pat or grounds maintenance at Whiteman, things like that. So that's a whole list. It's public knowledge. And if something is on that list, then you have to procure from them. That's sort of like I said, the mandatory reason. But there's also those social and fiscal benefits. So those 450 nonprofits, their whole purpose is to employ people with disabilities. And under the Ability One program, 75% of the direct labor employees have to have a disability or be visually impaired. So when we're using these contracts, 75% of the people performing them have some type of disability. So it gets them into the workplace. And really what that does for them is provides that meaning for those people with disabilities, as well as a path to financial independence and security. I mean, we just heard Jason's story. For every Jason story, there's 1,000 more like it of people with disabilities who once they found employment, had financial security, had more meaning in their life. So that's really, to me, the big thing to me. There's also some fiscal benefits. So when people are employed on Ability One contract, typically that turns them from being what we call a tax dollar recipient, you know, they're on some type of disability, to actually a tax-paying citizen. So last year there was a study conducted, and it said the United States realized $320 million in additional tax revenue and reduced federal benefits. An additional $49 million where those people that had those jobs were putting money into the economy. So total impact to the United States was over $370 million. So there's even a fiscal benefit to it as well, along with the social. And some other benefits from a contracting perspective is under Ability One, it's a long-term partnership once a requirement is on the procurement list. And so you don't have to recompete every 5 years. I tell the story about when I was at Fairchild Air Force Base and our grounds maintenance contractor was Ability One. They knew the water sprinkling system better than the government employees. They become experts because they had been there forever. They knew that base inside and out. They knew every piece of equipment, and they did a fantastic job. Number two, and I sort of hinted at, is you don't have to do a source selection every 5 years. If something's on the procurement list in Ability One, you just renegotiate every 5 years. One other benefit, typically Ability One employees, there's less turnover. I know that's a challenge in some of our service contracts. Typically, people with disabilities, once they get employed, they have a tendency to stay with the company much longer. And last but not least, we actually get Tier 2 category management credit for going to Ability One. And people may not know this, but every year the Air Force has to report category management numbers up to OMB. And so Ability One contracts help us meet those category management goals. So that's a sort of a quick summary of the benefits.
Okay, great. Great job, Roger. Yeah, thanks for that recap there. And you covered a lot of the capabilities that Ability One provides that maybe folks aren't aware of. But yeah, everything from supplies to services. So, and you hinted at this a little bit, but as the Ability One representative for AFICC, do you have goals or targets for Ability One contracting? And if so, do you usually meet those goals? And then take that a step further, how about across the Air Force? Do we have goals or targets, and are we usually successful in meeting those?
Hey, that's a great question. So yes, the Air Force has a goal, which 1%. It's not statutory based, but we do have a goal that came down from OSD to hit 1% of obligations. Currently, the Air Force is at 0.55%. So we're only about halfway to our goal. So that's a big reason why we need to expand beyond the normal custodian grounds maintenance to some of those other areas so we can reach that goal and employ more people like Jason.
All righty. Excellent. Yeah, hopefully this episode provides a little more outreach to get us that extra half percent that we're looking for there. So great. Thank you for that. So I think you've done a great job in explaining the program and the benefits. Now I'd like to transition into the how of doing things. So from my experience, I think there's a certain mystique about the program, or maybe fear of learning something new or doing something different from the way we've always done it. Or maybe fear that it would add time to the process. And none of those are good excuses, by the way. But can you break it down for us? How does one go about contracting under the Ability One program? So say I went to P2P, or I'm listening to this episode. I'm moved by Jason's story. I want to make a difference. I want to do the right thing. How do I go about it?
Hey, great question. And I'll start with the first part of when should you start to engage with Ability One. I would say as soon as you have a draft requirement, or at the minimum, bare minimum, whenever you're starting your market research and acquisition planning. So truth in advertising, it does take a little longer to get an item on the procurement list. It's about a 6 to 8 month process. So if this is the first time you're adding a requirement to the procurement list, you'll have to add in a little bit more time into your schedule. So that's just truth in advertising. Does take a little bit extra time if it's a new item. So the big other question is, well, how do I find out if Ability One can support a requirement? First of all, on the Ability One webpage, just Google it. They have a list of all the services and all the commodities they provide. And it's a really extensive list. I could spend 5 minutes just naming all the things. There's a lot of things that they do that most people aren't aware of. So I highly recommend people just go to Ability One. There's a section called Procurement List, and it lists all the services and commodities. Another choice would be to talk to your Ability One representative. You'll hear the term ABOR. So every AFMC center has an ABOR, and out at the other Air Force ICC MATCOMs, they also have ABORs. So they should sort of, they're sort of like the small business rep for the Ability One program. So they sort of have an understanding of the different capabilities and some of the vendors, and they can, you can have a discussion with them and say, does this sort of make sense to bring into the program? And then thirdly, you can actually contact Ability One, Source America, and NIB directly. They have a, on their website, they have a something called opportunity@abilityone.org. I'll say that again, opportunity@abilityone.org. You can actually send them their, your PWS for a service or contract and say, hey, can Ability One support this? And they'll give you a frank answer back, say, yes, we can, or no, we can't. And here's some possible vendors you can reach out to do your market research. So those people are there to provide that assistance. So the third part then is, how do we actually contract with them? So if the product is on the procurement list, then you're authorized to go sole source directly to them. That's FAR 6.302-5B2. For those that like to read the FAR, you can look it up in part six. It's authorized or required by statute. So if it's on the procurement list, then it's just, you can go directly to the vendor. If it's not on the procurement list, then you have to go through what they call the procurement list addition process. And I'm going to cover that real quickly because a lot of people don't understand it. So first of all, you do your market research like we just talked about. Think, oh, I think Ability One can do this. You then reach out to that central nonprofit like Source America and say, hey, I'm interested in adding this to the procurement list. I believe Ability One can do it. Source America will actually pick the vendor for you. So you don't have to run a source selection. Like I said, they have a, they do a mini source selection, look at technical factors. They will pick a vendor, and then you, once they pick that vendor, you reach out to them, issue them a solicitation, do a site visit, and negotiate your contract just like anything else. And once you have that negotiated price, Source America or NIB will put together a package and send that to the Ability One Commission, who has a staff review and says, yeah, this makes sense. Everything looks good. And the commission actually votes on it and says, thumbs up, we're going to add this procurement list. And then they actually have to publish it on the Federal Register. So that there's a process that goes to, takes about 6 months. But the information on how to do that is on the Ability One page. There's also training available to walk you through that process. So that's sort of what you got to do to get something added to the procurement list. Thanks.
All right. Excellent, Roger. Thank you for that. Yeah, so it sounds like it's a bit of an investment up front, but then, like you mentioned, when it comes time to renew those contracts or for retention and stability in the contract, there's certainly benefits along the way. So, yeah, thanks for explaining that. Yeah. And then, finally, I'd like to maybe offer a little teaser for a future episode. I've reached out to our folks at the Lifecycle Management Center Closeout Center of Excellence. I know they do a lot of contracting with Ability One, and that just kind of wraps it into our contracting community and how Ability One can help our mission. Are you familiar with that mission at all? Just a little bit of a teaser.
Oh, yeah. So like I said, there are many things Ability One vendors can do, and one of them is a contract closeout. So as you know, there is a contract here at Wright Pat that employs people with disabilities. In fact, a number of those people end up getting hired later as civil servants here at Wright Pat. That's been a very successful contract. I know contract closeout is one of the things we have a hard time getting to as contracting officers. Well, here's some people through a contract that you can hire to do that service for you. So, yeah, happy to talk about that later in a future podcast.
Okay, excellent. Yeah, great stuff, Roger. And then finally, we've covered a lot of ground, but I'd like to try to maybe dispel some myths about there about the program concerning Ability One. So here we go. Putting you on the hot seat a little bit. So okay. myth number one, the government must accept the price as offered. True or false?
Oh, that's absolutely false. And that is a myth. And I'm not sure how it got started, but it is still the contracting officer's responsibility to determine the price is fair and reasonable. And you have to negotiate it just like you would any other contract. Now, what people sometimes get confused is once you negotiate the price, it gets sent up to the Ability One Commission and they sort of give it a thumbs up. So they're not negotiating for you. They just want to make sure that the price is also fair and reasonable. But it's the contracting officer's job to make sure that price is. And if you get stuck, there's what they call an impasse process. You can elevate, if you get stuck in your negotiations, you can elevate to the commission and the nonprofits, and they will sort of helped negotiate and moved in negotiations along. So I'm glad you asked that question. I get that one all the time. Like, nope, that's the contracting officer job. Make sure you get a fair and reasonable price.
All right. Yeah, sounds like it. Just any other contract, right? Open a negotiation for that fair and reasonable price. All right. How about this one? Myth number two. If the vendor performs poorly or costs too much, there's no way out. We're stuck in a bad business deal. True or false?
Oh, that's another absolutely false. So once again, treat Ability One contract just like any other contract. You have the whole suite of contract administration actions you can take. You can normal communication and feedback and surveillance. You can issue them a letter of concern or more formal a corrective action request or CAR. And you can put them on a corrective action plan or performance improvement plan. And I tell the story when I was at Fairchild Air Force Base, we had issues with our grounds maintenance contractor. We put them on a PIP. We partnered with Source America and put them on a PIP and said, this is what you need to do to get this contract right. They actually changed out their management. In 6 months, they were performing just amazing. Later that fall, it was an Air Mobility Command had a base appearance contest, and we actually won that award for the whole Air Mobility Command based on the work of Ability One, grounds maintenance, also custodial. So, like I said, treat them just like any other contract. Now, there is a last resort. If they're not performing, the Ability One can transfer the contract to another nonprofit. They don't like to do that, so they like to work through the PIP and CAP process first. But bottom line is there's a number of ways you can go about it if you're not getting the performance. Just hold them accountable like any other contractor.
All right. Yeah, thanks for that, Rod. Yeah, just like any other contract, the government maintains those rights for performance and everything else in accordance with the contract. So Thanks for that. And then last one kind of ties in with the with the previous one. But myth number three, for DOD, Ability One contracts are exempt from CPARs. True or false?
And that is also false. So CPARs are required if they meet the applicable thresholds. And if you look at the DOD CPARs guide, paragraph 2.11, it says that. Do CPARs if they meet those thresholds. And once again, that's a good way to provide the contractor feedback and to document the performance. And just so you know, the Ability One is going to run a pilot program. We'll actually, on larger contracts, actually do a competition. And so that CPARs information will be invaluable when we do those competitions. Thanks.
Okay, excellent. Yeah, like everything else, all of these myths have been debunked. Pretty much your normal contracting arrangement, feedback, communication, rectification. Easy stuff. So thank you, Roger. I think we've definitely covered a lot of ground there and gained some valuable insight into the world of Ability One contracting. Thank you so much for joining us and taking on those tough questions. Do you have any parting words of wisdom or advice you'd like to offer our listeners regarding the Ability One program?
Thanks. Just a couple things. One is, you know, if you're doing your market research and Ability One can't meet the whole requirement, you can do subcontracting with Ability One. There's a process for that. And so a lot of things, if you have like a big boss contract, they may be able to fill a niche for you. So always keep in mind, even with subcontracts, Ability One can help do that. But last and more importantly, I think Ability One is a program that works. It not only does it help people with disabilities find employment and achieve financial independence, it helps them find true meaning. I mean, like I said, Jason's story was fantastic. There's 1,000 more like it. And that's why the program really means a lot to me. And it does save people money, as I talked about, by having more people paying taxes and off of disability. So there's benefits on both sides, both from helping people, but also being fiscally responsible with the taxpayer dollars. So thank you for the opportunity to talk about it.
All right. Excellent. Thank you again, Roger. And back to Jason. We opened up this episode with you, and thanks again for sharing your experiences. Maybe you've even learned a little bit more than you wanted to on the inner workings of government contracting. But now I'd like to give you a chance to close things out with any final thoughts you'd like to leave our listeners with.
Thank you. The one thing I'd like to say is this program, I was allotted a chance to move over to SOCOM in a GS position when I was there. because the thing about this program is a lot of people will use it as a stepping stone and move on to better jobs, use this as a way. And honestly, that's amazing experience. I turned it down because I love who I work with. I love all my team members, and the joy that I see on their faces when they're succeeding, that's what is priceless to me. So honestly, I just want to say that I'm thankful for the Ability One program and all the opportunities it's allotted me, and also all the opportunities it's allotted all my team members that I have seen grow and flourish because of this program. Thank you.
All right. Excellent. Thanks again, Jason. So, gentlemen, thank you both so much for sharing your experiences and insights on the contracting experience. This has been a great conversation, and I'm grateful you could both join us. On behalf of the Contracting Experience Podcast, all of our listeners and subscribers, thank you so much for joining us today. It has been a pleasure having you. And thank you to all of our podcast listeners, followers, and subscribers. If you have any feedback, suggestions for topics, or future guests you would like to hear on the podcast, you can submit those via email to thecontractingexperience@gmail.com. As a reminder, you can subscribe to the Contracting Experience Podcast from any of your podcast listening platforms. Be sure to subscribe to receive updates and automatic downloads so you don't miss a single episode. I'm your host, Rob Lorton, from the AFMCE Contracting Digital Division, and I hope you can join us again for our upcoming episodes. Until then, stay tuned and stay connected.